Today on Jay Sekulow Live, President Trump returns to the White House. We'll talk about that with Rick Rennell, our special advisor and former cabinet member of President Trump's, and Lindsey Graham, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has officially scheduled the hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett so she gets confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to talk about all of that today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So President Trump returns to the White House last night. I thought in a pretty amazing scene to watch. Just because of being able to see the Marine One land at kind of dusk and, the sun setting, and to see, again, why it's important to have the Commander-in-Chief at the White House. And then the President, after getting off Marine One, walked up the steps and actually then filmed a video that, again, so it just shows you, I think what the President said is accurate. And we talked about this with Rick Rennell yesterday, but that we cannot let COVID stop our economy and our lives. And we've seen, and we've heard from so many people. I know that just at my church, I'm not going to name it, but there's been a lot of people have dealt with a lot of issues that are totally unrelated to COVID diagnoses, but are totally related to COVID shutdowns, closures. And it's not even economic. It's the inability to do, kind of carry out normal life, or the isolation of life that is affecting people, especially elderly people people who had small businesses that were doing well, and then they were kind of left out of that first round of shutdowns in most places, and now they're starting to open back up, but the damage was done and is continuing in some of the bluer states as well. So I thought it was great to see that after, from Friday going into Walter Reed, by Monday, it's not that the president's done being treated. No one's saying, he's not done with COVID, but that he's able to return to the White House, which has something different than any of us have at our house, unless you're very unique, which is medical doctors, an ICU, all the equipment that you would need, and you can bring, of course, specialists in as necessary. And if you need to go back, you could go back easily. He's the president of the United States. He governs the country. He is a leader of the free world, regardless if you vote for him or not. He's in charge of our U.S. military. It was good to see that no adversaries were trying to take advantage, and he was, reported on that. And I think they knew there was no time to do that anyways. He was just as strong in his ability to be able to lead. So there's no 25th Amendment issue has come up. It doesn't appear that that would come up unless that in an unfortunate situation where the president took some kind of bad turn. But I don't think his doctors would have said go back to the White House if they thought that was likely or even a real possibility. But you never know with this disease. It's still something we're learning about. The president even talked about that. He's still learning about it as well. So I think it was very important symbolism, not for politics, not for the election, for America to the world. So this is the difference between America and our leaders versus leaders in other countries. Our leaders get sick, they get taken care of. We have the best medical care in the world. Of course, they should get that incredible medical care. They deserve that as President of the United States because of their job. And they can be back at their office, which is also their home. I mean, he's in a very unique situation. So all this talk like, oh, he's exposing people, he's exposing this. He's the President of the United States. He has to take Marine One. Everyone had masks on. Yes, people have come down with a diagnosis. But this is part of being president, being a leader. And I think what the left doesn't like is that it shows to the world why we're so different. Our president at 74 can go in and out in 3 days with COVID. He's not, and was never out of pocket. It was fairly amazing. I think it was very strong showing to the world. Rick Rennell is going to be joining us, our special advisor, in the next segment of the broadcast. I want to get into more, because it's spreading like wildfire on social media. His new post up at ACLJ.org on Hunter Biden. And we just kind of teased that yesterday. We're going to get into that with Rick as well. Wes Smith also joining us. And we're going to take your calls 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get into the school choice issue as well. The second half hour with Corey DeAngelis from the Reason Foundation. His new book about school choice myths is out tomorrow. And he's really been helping us as we've been fighting for parents and students around the country. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live, our special advisor for national security and foreign policy, the former acting director of national intelligence, a former member of President Trump's cabinet, and former ambassador to Germany. We could go on and on about Rick Rennell, but you know he's been on the broadcast now as our special advisor, part of our team at the ACLJ a couple times a week at least, and he's been writing for ACLJ.org. In his latest piece, it went up right after radio yesterday, on the Senate report revealing that Hunter Biden was profiteering during the Obama administration, that it went further than previously thought. And Rick, I wanted to go right into the piece because I think it's really important people hear this because they're not getting it from other news sources. The other news sources are talking about the president's helicopter rides and whether or not he should be filming a video and should he be back at the White House as president of the United States. I mean, absurd, and we can talk about some of that too, but they're not talking about these real scandals. I hope they come up, and the president said he looks forward to the debate in Miami, which is a town hall, so I don't, in that setting, it might come up, but again, there's another debate then too, and of course, the vice presidential debate tomorrow, but you write early on in this piece that the scandal is worse than anyone thought because it wasn't just the money from the Ukrainian oligarchs that Hunter Biden received, the millions of dollars, but that even the British corruption investigators found that Hunter's firm was accepting a wire transfer of $3.5 million. These are massive amounts of money from the wealthiest woman in Russia and the ex-wife of the former mayor. And this is while Russia and Ukraine are in a conflict that we were supposed to kind of be during the Obama administration. They didn't do much, Rick, but we were supposed to be on Ukraine's side while Crimea was being annexed.
Yeah, so let's just take a step back here and think about the ways of Washington and the rules of Washington. This is a really corruption at its core. We have a system in Washington that when you know somebody, when your father is the vice president, regardless of the fact if you have any experience in energy, you can get $50,000 a month. In a consulting fee, which is what Hunter Biden got, $50,000 a month, all because he was connected to the vice president at the time, who also, let's remember, by his own admission, Joe Biden was running foreign policy, that he was the foreign policy expert. He's the former chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So in the Obama-Biden administration, Joe Biden was the point person for foreign policy issues. And so he's in charge of trying to clean up the corruption in Ukraine. We know that he made this famous comment on camera saying that he was threatening the Ukrainians to do certain things, otherwise they weren't going to get money from the United States government. That's a scandal right there. The fact that Washington just dismisses this is indicative of the fact that they like their rules, and their rules mean that they get to break every other rule. And their rules in Washington, D.C. that Joe Biden always plays by is that lobbyists and connections and money flow. And this is just the ways of Washington. And so you think about somebody like Hunter Biden, who had zero experience in energy issues, getting $50,000 a month, plus this payment that you highlight, $3.5 million from a woman who used to be her ex-husband was the mayor of Moscow. This is really a scandal in the making, because what we have now found out is that the State Department under the Obama administration was very concerned. Career officials of the State Department, very concerned about what was going on. They raised these issues with then Vice President Joe Biden's office and said, we don't feel comfortable with you talking about Ukrainian policy from the White House and your son on the board of these different entities receiving $50,000 a month. It's a big problem. Remember that the Democrats went after Rudy Giuliani for all of his work in the Ukraine, trying to tie him to President Trump. I really believe this. I've heard people say that whenever the Democrats come at you accusing you of something, it's always something that they're doing. This is a perfect example. They are screaming about Ukrainian policy and what Rudy Giuliani's doing. And this entire situation of the State Department raising their concerns, career officials saying, we don't like it, what are you going to do about it? Joe Biden, as vice president, ignored those concerns from the State Department. He allowed his son to continue getting $50,000 a month just to have access to the vice president's son, not because he was an expert on any energy issues. The White House knew of these problems, ignored them. And here's the biggest thing for me. It didn't leak. Nobody at the State Department told any reporter. Nobody at the White House leaked. Everything that happens in the Trump administration leaks. I think that the Trump administration is probably the most transparent administration in the history of the world, because everything we do leaks. Every thought, every conversation, every, you know, hey, let's think about this. And then suddenly it's like the Trump administration is thinking about this. It really is unbelievable that the system in Washington protects its own. And this is why they want Joe Biden to come back, because the 47 years that he was in Washington, he played by the rules, and he knows their rules. And their rules, remember, do not help Americans. It's an insider's game of money and information and power.
And this was, I mean, again, I think the fact that it's being picked up by the British, it's being picked up by, I mean, we know that the Obama administration's, you know, president himself is being briefed on it. It didn't leak, Rick. And then the fact that it doesn't appear that President Obama cared, even though it was affecting their policy. And Joe Biden certainly didn't. He didn't tell him to stop. And he keeps telling President Trump he's lying about it, which he's not lying. He said that, but then he also admitted to getting money from their good friend, the former mayor of Moscow's wife. I mean, so President Trump is not lying in the debates when he brings this up.
No, he's not lying. And the fact of the matter is that the State Department, the career officials, were just as concerned as President Trump years ago. And you know, they just dismissed it. But here's why they dismissed it. Here's why President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden and all of the, you know, people who cover Washington, reporters who are in the swamp, this is why they dismissed it back then. You know, because politicians' sons from the Democratic side get to make a lot of money. That's just the rule. That's part of the game. That's the game of Washington. That's the price that you pay. And so it's not that odd to them that the vice president's son has a $50,000 a month contract. They just think, yeah, you know, yeah, we're Washington. Dad's the vice president. Why doesn't he get to do
that? Yeah, I mean, well, John King on CNN said it. He said it, Rick. I mean, take a listen. This is on CNN. John King talking about Hunter Biden doing the shrug. Bite 20.
Hunter Biden, in many ways, is a weakness for the former vice president because of his work. He was I'll call it out. He's a swamp creature, like many people, trading under his family name to make money around the world.
There aren't that many people, Rick, who can trade on their family name and make that kind of money around the world.
Yeah, like many people, Jordan.
Like many.
This is just what they do. This is how you dismiss it. It's like, oh yeah, like many people. This is the ways of Washington. He's not doing anything different than Washington. John King is a creature of Washington. He's seen this so many times that he's like, yeah, $50,000 a month, like many people. I think that's shocking. I think that that's unbelievably shocking.
Yes. When they just say it like that, they say that, you know, we could all do this. But I know, Wes, you got a question as well. We got a couple minutes left with Rick.
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed. And I had written down before Rick started talking, the word corruption encircled it. This is the dictionary definition of corruption, Rick. And here's the thing. You mentioned this double standard, and it's obviously there. But when these things come out, like all this has been coming out in spite of the biased media about Hunter Biden's dealings and how the Obama administration looked the other way. But when they are called out on it, when this kind of information actually gets to the public, not only does the mainstream media soft pedal it, but at the same time, whenever they're confronted with it, as Vice President Biden has been confronted, they're not even embarrassed. They're not ashamed, Rick. That, you know, one of the indictments of the Old Testament prophet for ancient Israel was they had forgotten how to blush. And I think that this swamp creature thing and all the family connections, the politicians, they have forgotten how to blush. But the American people have not.
Yeah, no, look, I want to make one thing clear. I have no problem with people who are experts in their field making a lot of money. I think that if you are providing an expertise to a project or something, gee, I wish I could get that contract, which I can't. But I just want to make it clear that it's not about the expertise that you're hiring, because we certainly know in Washington there are, you know, experts on these different projects. The difference is that Hunter Biden didn't have any experience other than being the vice president's son. This is the definition of corruption. You're paid for access.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So again, folks, we will, as always, we clip Rick's interviews out so we can share those on social media. And I'll share again his new piece, because you just heard, if you didn't see it yesterday, you need to read this. It's up right at aclj.org. Rick, as always, great to have you. I know you're very busy, and it's a wild time. 28 days left, though I don't know if that's going to be actually the end of the election. We will see, folks. We'll talk about some of that when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. This is an interesting question on Facebook. William Stinson writes in, I'm planning to vote for President Trump, but I am concerned about polls showing him low. Should I be concerned? Listen, we're 20 to 8 days out. The president has never polled particularly well in the last election cycle and even throughout his presidency when the economy's booming. And yet Republicans still control the Senate and he won what was an electoral college landslide. And people want to talk about the popular vote. Well, yeah, if you got elected by popular vote and it didn't matter about the electoral college, then even if you were President Trump, you'd spend all your time in a lot of blue states because it'd just be about votes. So you'd spend time in California, which you know is going blue electorally, which helps Democrats, a huge state, like in New York. But there are a lot of Republican votes there. So you would campaign very differently. Hillary Clinton just messed that up. I don't think that Joe Biden is necessarily doing that, but he's not campaigning traditionally, and we're not going to see a traditional end to this campaign either. I think that is these polls that are showing these huge margin changes, like he's 16 points behind nationally. National polls, we're 28 days out. Stop paying attention to them. Just stop. They do not matter. It's people start focusing in on how this election, if they're going to vote, how it affects them, not the nation, but them. And that's good. They think about how it affects the country. Of course, they could have family in the military. They, you know, issues like that, national security, but also their pocketbooks and dealing with COVID. Do they want a mask mandate like Joe Biden wants? Or do they want more open businesses and the idea that we're risk takers in America? I think there's a choice there. You take good risks. You take smart risks. You don't act stupid. But I want to go to Wes on this because, Wes, I think it's like this. You look at state by state, and I feel like if polls are like 5-6 points to Biden, that is still basically a tied state. I'm not saying that's definite to Trump, because a lot of those states that caused the electoral landslide were states that, you know, Mitt Romney lost by 0.2% and Donald Trump won by 0.2 and 3%, so not even by a percent. So, but it means that those are similar to the polls we saw with Hillary Clinton. And it means that he's still in the running. The polls always oversample Democrats. So I think that unless it's like showing 10 plus points in a state and a reliable, fairly reliable poll, that there's the 5 points are going to be made up by President Trump supporters. It's whether or not, you know, you see these polls start shifting against the president at the state level and trusted polls, not right. I don't even want to see registered voters now. I want likely voters. That's what I want to see in polls.
Yeah. And thank God for the Electoral College, too. Otherwise, you'd have a few population centers around the country electing every president.
No one would be going to Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's much more fair. To answer William's question, I don't think Trump supporters can take anything for granted. But the thing I think about when I look at the polls, as you said, they oversampled Democrats. A lot of people, and I know a lot of these people because they talk to me, they are going to vote for President Trump, but there's no way they're going to tell anyone other than maybe their closest family members. And then the other thing I think about is 4 years ago, all of the polls, all of them, had Hillary Clinton winning by a substantial margin, and they were all wrong. And I think that we can't take anything for granted, and people do need to get out and vote. They need to make sure their family members and friends vote. That's very, very important. It's going to be a complicated election. I don't look for there to be any results called on election night. I think it's going to take days, if we're lucky, if not weeks, because of all the mail-in balloting and all that fiasco that's going on as well, and the effects of COVID-19. But on the other hand, I think the polls, we need to pay attention to them, and it needs to energize those who get out and vote. But I don't think you can trust the polls because of the oversampling of Democrats, how they phrase the questions, and people who are going to vote for the president. They may not like him personally, but they like his policies, and they don't want to go back to the good old days of the Obama-Biden administration when unemployment was high And according to them, manufacturing had left America for good. And you could go on and on down the list. President Trump's policies have worked. And I think the majority of the American people realize that, even if they don't care for him personally. And I think those people, like they did 4 years ago, they're going to vote for Donald Trump.
There's also been, Aaron Goldbranson from our research team for our radio broadcast, I just pointed out too, and something we've talked about a lot, and if you work on campaigns, you know about, but it's these kind of voter registration pushes. Now, a lot of states, it's coming, unless you have same-day voter registration, and always look in your state. I'm not making any, but many states, the time to register to vote is passing or it's about to pass. So make sure you know the rules, and if you go on any social media, they're inundating you with that. But the Republican Party has registered a ton of new voters because they kept their grassroots moving through COVID, and they focused on voter registration places like Florida and Pennsylvania and battleground states. Because typically, and this is known, people don't change their voter registrations a lot. So a lot of older voters who are more conservative are still registered Democrats in many states. And if you're not in a state where that impacts whether you can vote in a primary or not for president, you didn't necessarily go through the process of changing your voter registration. So you'll see, even in places like Texas, where you think of like pretty red states, the Democrats, more Democrats register than Republican. But there has been a Republican vote, there's been grassroots. There is that still grassroots effort. And you may see that more depending on where you live. I happen to live in a red state. We have an active Senate campaign, but honestly, the primary was more active there. Bill Hagerty, who's running in Tennessee, who's been on our broadcast before. The Senate race itself, obviously, people need to come out and vote, but it's not nearly as intense as the primary was on the Republican side because it's just a redder state in Tennessee. If you live in one of those battleground states, you are not just being inundated with ads at this point. You've probably got people knocking on your door, calling you by the phone, encouraging, making sure you were registered to vote, making sure you know where to vote. That'll be next. Keeping you updated on the issues. And that's not just at the presidential level, the Senate level, the congressional level. If you have gubernatorial races, the list goes on. And that you especially feel that when you're in a battleground state. And it's a different feeling than probably, because if you go through, we're on every, all 50 states, probably only about 15 or 16 of those states are getting that kind of inundation. So most of you listening aren't. And some of the biggest states aren't on that list usually, like California, New York. Florida is. It's the largest state that is like a battleground state. And then Texas kind of like halfway. I don't think it really is presidentially. They're not looking that that's going to be an issue for Republicans. But again, it's a big question. I think the big question, Wes, and we're going to continue to obviously talk about this. The vice presidential debate is tomorrow at 9 p.m. I think it takes on a new kind of importance, especially because you've got the president's been diagnosed with COVID. He's 74, and Joe Biden's 78. So Kamala Harris got a job to do. So does Mike Pence. That's tomorrow at 9 p.m. It's out in Utah. And then the president said, he's looking forward to the next debate, which is just a week from Thursday. So he should have time if he's recovering. Should have time to be able to be there and do it safely. That's in Miami. So we've got a lot more politicking to go.
Yeah, we do. And the other thing that we haven't mentioned today that I think will make a difference as we move toward Election Day, and that is the increased support among African Americans and Hispanics for the president, because they have felt the positive result of his policies in their pocketbooks. And so that becomes another factor. He was not going to win the majority of those votes. He will win significantly more than he did last time and more than any Republican president probably ever has.
All right, folks. We're going to continue to take your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. And Corey DeAngelis from the Reason Foundation. She's got a new book out tomorrow. You can order it today. School Choice Myths. He'll be joining us next segment.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
We will fight for Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're talking politics. Next vice presidential debate, again, is the only vice presidential debate is tomorrow. And I think, again, because of COVID, because a lot of people are at home, you know, they talked that the first presidential debate, the ratings were lower than last time around. Well, you had two pretty interesting figures last time around. You had Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. People, you know, Donald Trump's been our president for 4 years now, and the ratings were still, when they did, all said and done, it was like 74 million people. So not nothing. And even though it was just a kind of wild debate, I don't expect, because of personalities, the vice presidential debate to be anything like that. But I think you're going to get a lot of substance and issue focused. And, you know, Mike Pence has got a job to do because of the president. Now he's back in the White House, and I think he's been handling this very well. But, you know, people start thinking now, just like they have with Kamala Harris, you know, they start thinking, it's not just about, it's about obviously talking about what the Trump administration wants to do in the next 4 years. But it's also an opportunity for Mike Pence to say, and, you know, I'm ready to lead, and this is what, you know, it kind of put that forward, because you don't get that many opportunities, unless you're really a news follower, I know a lot of you are on this broadcast, to see the vice president in action this way, you know, in kind of back and forth, tougher exchanges. So, and then for Kamala Harris, I mean, she's the vice presidential nominee for a 78-year-old guy. So she's got to, I think, prove that she's ready to be president. That's no harm or ill will towards Joe Biden at all on his health, but that's just reality. And so I think you've got these two conflicting things, and the news, I mean, there's so much changing every single day that literally you could come on and you've got, you know, the president returning last night, polls that are changing. I think some information that's not getting out that should, like we just talked about with Rick on Hunter Biden. I mean, the fact that the British intel was looking into this, that this was affecting foreign policy, this was affecting the world, and the Obama administration knew about it, President Obama knew about it, Vice President Biden knew about it. You had State Department officials bring it up year after year, not just one time, but year, and then a year later bring it back up. And this is while Russia was invading Ukraine, and we wouldn't send lethal aid to assist Ukraine. So Crimea was annexed. And you want to talk about who's weaker on Russia? Hey, everything will be better after I'm elected. Tell Vladimir. That was the Obama years. And it wasn't that Hunter was just making money off Ukraine, which, by the way, at some points has been like a controlled by Russia. He was also making money from you know, the families of prominent Russian officials during the Obama administration. And I believe this is, I don't think they've drilled down to this level. I think what Hunter really is the conduit to the Biden family money. We got a little bit of hint in that in the Senate report, because there was a line of credit opened up by a Chinese government official that even like brother-in-laws and uncles were being able to utilize from the Biden family. So, and Hunter kind of brokered that. So he was like bringing money into the family. He was like the conduit of that, because again, Joe Biden's been a public official his entire life. And in elected officials. So to make the family's been the one making the money, I feel like he's just kind of like been this conduit. But again, that's where I think it would lead if you investigate that, is that Joe Biden's benefited a lot from this money. And that's why he doesn't want to go after and even distance himself from it, and why it didn't stop. Because his whole family was benefiting from it, not just Hunter. So they kind of want us to focus only there. But I think there's a bigger picture there. And that's how I see that playing out. And remember, these investigations will only continue, and we will only really get to the bottom of these things if, depending on the outcome of the election. I'm not telling you to vote because of an investigation, vote one way or the other. But you know, if Joe Biden comes in, that these investigations are going to be, as far as they go, is going to be the Senate level. And the Senate's not going to be working with the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, to get info, or the Justice Department, because it's going to be in different hands. So all of that info that you may want to learn more about really does come down to who wins and if these investigations can continue or not. Also comes down to the makeup of the U.S. Senate, especially if the House remains in Democrat control. I don't think we know yet. I mean, 28 days seems like a very short time, but come on, folks, let's think about how long a day is right now. A day is like a week, and it has been since COVID, and I think with this race, even more so. Corey DeAngelis on his new book coming up next on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's put it up on the screen. The new book out tomorrow by Corey DeAngelis. He is the director of school choice at the Reason Foundation. She's been on our broadcast many times as parents, and we've been representing, we still are, families, probably still over 1,000 families that are still working through all the issues that COVID has caused them to face, as well as wanting, I think it's sped up the idea of school choice, but there are still a lot of people, including a lot of our audience, with questions all the time about, well, is this really good? Is this going to hurt this? Is this going to hurt this aspect? Should we really be doing this? Because only about half the country has any experience with school choice at all, and for the most part, that's only at the lowest income levels. So Corey has written a new book. It's out tomorrow. It's available on Amazon. It's currently the number one new release in educational funding on Amazon. It is called School Choice Myths, Setting the Record Straight on Educational Freedom. I encourage every one of you listening to this broadcast to get this book because there are a lot of myths out there. And remember, you've got one party, the Republican Party, saying, we want to expand school choice. And you've got the Democrat Party platform saying they want to eliminate all school choice programs and even charter schools. And Joe Biden has endorsed that. Well, Corey DeAngelis, the author of the new book, is joining us today. And Corey, it's great to have you on. First, tell people what they will learn when they check out this book and how you define, I think this is interesting, how you would define school choice, because even that is something that people, could be very broad.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jordan. It's great to talk to you again. But it's really good timing for this book to come out because school choice is needed now more than ever because the schools aren't even reopening in so many places in the United States. According to Education Week's tracker on this, 3/4 of the 100 largest school districts are not reopening with any in-person instruction available to students right now. So families have always been getting the short end of the stick when it comes to K-12 education because the money goes to institutions and not directly to students and families. But it's clear now more than ever that the schools aren't even reopening and families are seeing that the buildings are still getting the money for their children without providing them with adequate education or any in-person instruction at all. So I'm glad this timed out pretty well with the current debate. But the way that I will describe school choice is pretty simple. It's any policy that allows the funding, education funding, to follow the child instead of the institution. The norm in K-12 education in the United States is that the money goes to the buildings regardless of the choice of the family in the matter and regardless of how well the that building is serving the needs of the children. And regardless, again, of whether that building is even reopening for in-person instruction. And so this is essentially how we structure any other taxpayer-funded initiative. And we can, you know, debate whether these other initiatives should exist at all or how much we should fund these other initiatives. But in all these other taxpayer-funded programs, the money goes to families and students and individuals and not institutions. So think of things like Pell Grants and the GI Bill for higher education. The money goes to the student, and the student can pick a public or private university of their choosing, even a private religious university if they want. Same thing with pre-K programs. With pre-K programs, the money goes to the family, and the family can rightly choose a public or private provider of pre-K services. Same thing with food stamps. The funding doesn't the government-run, residentially assigned grocery store. No, and then everybody would think that would be absolutely ridiculous. Instead, the funding goes to the family, and the family can pick where they shop. They can go to Walmart, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's. And so all I'm arguing for when I talk about school choice is to reallocate that funding from institutions to families, and families should have a choice in the matter of where to take those dollars. That could be the public school if you want, if that works for you, if that's the best reopening decision that's happening with that traditional public school, you should still have that choice to attend your neighborhood school. But if that doesn't work for whatever reason, you should be able to attend a charter, a private school, a micro school, or pandemic pod that a lot of people are talking about right now. And you should be able to use that funding to offset the cost of home-based education as well. And so the need for this book is pretty clear, because there's a lot of mythology that's spread throughout the education debate from the special interests that profit from getting your money regardless of whether they meet your individual needs or not. So we tackle 12 of the biggest myths in this book, School Choice Myths, and this is co-edited with Cato Institute's Neil McCluskey. But we get a lot of the top scholars from throughout the nation to tackle different myths from, you know, school choice apparently defunds public schools, or school choice will lead to inequities or leave kids worse off. We tackle all of these and many more myths in the book as well. And I think what we show here is there's no legitimate reason to oppose funding students and instead preferring to fund institutions. There's no good reason not to fund students directly.
Corey, I want to, again, I just, so people know, Corey has been on, you've heard Corey a number of times, seen him if you watch the broadcast as well, or listen to the broadcast either way, a number of times as director of School Choice from the Reason Foundation, because these issues have really risen, gone to the forefront. And I think that's great. We're having better discussions. We're seeing it more at the state level, even at a federal level, to some extent, you know, with trying to, there have been efforts trying to send money back to parents and getting more opportunities, because it didn't really matter where you were on the income scale. School is just not what it was in many states. And so parents wanted other options. And even, you know, middle-class Americans that couldn't necessarily afford to bring in tutors on their own. Are they kind of coming together, putting together those pods? But the book is called School Choice Myths, Setting the Record Straight on Educational Freedom. I will tweet out the link at the end of the broadcast today, so you know you can go on Twitter. Let's put the link up on my Facebook page as well, guys, so people know where to order it. But I want to go through some of the myths too, because people always want to be able to have this discussion, Corey, with their friends and family, because they always have certain questions. Like, I think number one is always this: won't this just destroy public schools and public education?
Yeah, let's get into a couple of these myths really quickly. And I first want to point out really quickly that a lot of the people who support funding students directly and individuals directly when it comes to pre-K and higher education with Pell Grants and the GI Bill oppose it when it comes to K-12 education. And that doesn't make any sense unless you think about the power dynamics at play here, because the norm in pre-K and higher education is you already have choice. But the difference with K-12 education is that there's an entrenched special interest that profits from getting your money directly, regardless of how well they meet your needs. You don't have that same power dynamic with pre-K and higher education. So I think that's why there's this logical inconsistency from the other side at supporting one, but then not the other. But let's get to this first myth that we hear all the time, that school choice will defund public schools. My initial response is, no, it doesn't. School choice does not defund public schools. Public schools defund families. School choice just returns that money into the hands of the rightful owners. And then those families can still choose public schools if they want, but they could choose private and other schools as well. that best meets their individual needs. You would similarly never hear someone say, you would think it would be absolutely ridiculous for people to say that allowing families to choose where they shop for groceries defunds Safeway. It doesn't defund Safeway because the money doesn't belong to Safeway. It's meant for providing families with their groceries. Just similarly, choosing your school and allowing families to choose a private school does not defund the public schools. The money doesn't belong to the public schools. Education funding is supposed to be meant for educating the child, not propping up and protecting a government monopoly. So we should restructure education to fit our priorities, which should be the students and not the adults and employees and the monopoly system. So we should fund students instead of institutions and systems. But it gets even worse than that, because traditional public schools are partially funded based on enrollment counts, but not completely. So what that means on a per pupil basis is that when they lose students, they actually financially benefit. They only lose a certain portion of those dollars based on student enrollment, and then they get to keep a lot of the money. So on a per pupil basis, they actually financially benefit when it comes to school choice as far as the traditional public school districts are concerned. Just imagine if you started shopping at Trader Joe's and then Walmart got to keep 20% of your funding for groceries each week without even having to give you any groceries. Walmart would be very happy about that deal. And I similarly argue that the traditional public school should be very happy about the deal that they're getting right now, that they get to keep any money at all. And it's also this argument is a strange admission of failure to meet the needs of individual families. If you think that your public schools are doing a good job, why would you think that giving families an option to leave would result in defunding the public schools? You would only think that if you believe that families, when given the choice, would leave your school system. And so an admission of failure of the school system to meet the individual needs of families. And although we have, 82% of students in traditional public schools in the United States today, when you survey families and ask them where they would like to send their children if they had meaningful options, only about 30 to 40% say that they would actually send their kids to the traditional schools.
All right, folks, that is just one myth. Others, like school choice hurts the kids left behind in the public schools. Is that true? School choice has racist origins and leads to segregation. Is that true? School choice is unconstitutional. That's just some of the myths that, again, Corey DeAngelis explains. And you all, I know our audience wants to know more about school choice, and we've launched that initiative. You want to be educated. This is a great place to start, because Corey supports school choice. And he's helping you to be able to have those conversations with people. I can't wait to read the book. It's going to help me have the conversations with our callers that come in with different questions that sometimes get very detailed. So get the book. It's called School Choice Myths, Setting the Record Straight on Educational Freedom. It's out tomorrow, so order it today on Amazon. Thanks for being with us, Corey. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We're taking your phone calls. That's what we're going to do right now, 1-800-684-3110. Joyce Solomon wrote, how would school choice work in low-tax districts? These are all going to be addressed in Corey DeAngelis' book. And again, I could get into that right now. And I think that the way you look at it is there's still a lot of tax. Remember, it's not just done by district, state level. So you've got all people, remember, are still paying taxes. And it's regardless if you've even got children in schools. You could be past school age. You cannot have children in school anymore. You might never have children. You're still paying the taxes to it. So the money is still there. And then you can utilize at the state level, you've got resources coming in from higher income areas. You're able to do that. So I think that's the short answer. But again, I encourage you to check out Corey DeAngelis' new book. You know, you can, it's out tomorrow. If you've got an e-reader or stuff, you get the ebook, you can download it immediately. Of course, a lot of you, if you get it through Amazon, again, you can get that like same day. So you could probably have it by tomorrow afternoon or even sooner. So check that out. I want to go right to the phones, though, because a lot about, you know, we're 28 days out. We got the VP debate tomorrow. People have got lots of questions, and I want to go right to them. Let's go to Scott in Oklahoma online, too. Scott, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, real quick, I voted third party last election. I definitely wasn't voting for Hillary, and I wasn't really buying Trump. Since then, based off Trump's performance and his delivering on promises that he made, I'm definitely voting for him this time, and was just wondering if you had any kind of sense of how many Americans are in a similar situation as me.
Well, you know, it's very interesting to see. Like, so you voted third party. You didn't really know enough about President Trump or how he would govern, right? I mean, Scott, that's the issues. A lot of people, he kind of said where he was on the issues. And I think that that persuaded a lot of Americans, obviously, to vote for him because they liked where he was on the issues, even though he didn't have the political experience to show that. But then you got to see it in action, Scott. So that's changed your mind about how you're going to vote.
Exactly.
I wonder, you know, how many people are out there, and it's not necessarily that you're like you're flag waving, MAGA waving. Though there's certainly more of that now than there was the last time around. I have a yard sign in my yard. I did not in the last election cycle, and it was not really just – now, I'm not in a state that it's not one of the most focused, but I think – I wanted to make that statement because I wrote a book called The Next Red Wave, and it says in the book we more and more of us need to be more vocal. You know, more of the silent majority should be more vocal. And it still doesn't mean that there's a lot of people who are always going to be afraid for their job, for their family, and, you know, maybe the husband and wife, they don't agree. People in the household don't agree who to vote for, so you say no yard signs and no bumper stickers. But – for those of us, again, who can be more vocal, I think this is an election where we need to be. And if you feel comfortable, if you feel like you're going to be safe, it's okay to do, to put out the yard sign or put on the bumper sticker, because it lets other people know in the community that you interact in that, hey, that's someone that, you know, I'm friends with that I like, and they're voting the same way I was thinking about voting, but, you know, I wasn't sure because no one's really talking, but people are afraid to talk about Trump this way or that. I think it's less and less like that, but in a lot of these battleground states where it's 50-50 and you get into the group that hasn't decided, I mean, people do kind of get more concerned about talking about it when they are in groups of people that they're not sure where they are politically. So it lets other people know, hey, it's safe to talk to me about this. And of course the other side, we know where they are. I think it's been interesting to see, but, I still believe that a lot of the vote is a silent group. That is still not going to put the bumper sticker on because the media makes you out to be a racist or xenophobic or somehow you're dangerous or you're a militia member, this, that, and the other, if you support President Trump and you're somehow a bad person for society and that you want to spread COVID and things like this. So people just, they hear that in the mainstream media, even if they totally disagree, they say, you know, I don't want to be a part of that. So they decide not to. So I think that's the difference between President Trump and many other politicians who are like lifelong politicians that people don't have issues with about, you know, putting on the bumper sticker, putting out the sign, and people don't get into the same kind of like name calling. It always gets tough when you get less than a month out, even with more mainstream political candidates who weren't draining the swamp. It gets tougher and tougher, and there's surprises, there's nastiness that comes out to try and sway you, and we're 28 days out, so that's not even, we're not even to that point yet. But I want to take the final two calls of the day. Let me go first to Ed in Florida, then I'll go to Mary in Maryland. Ed, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Ed. Just a couple of comments I was looking for your feedback on. Definitely voting for Trump. I'm a conservative. But I'm worried because, you know, this election, like many of them, is going to come down to the swing vote, right? I'm in Florida. I'm in a battleground state. And Trump has got to get that swing vote to win the election. But here's the problem. I don't think he's winning at that. And the problem is his messaging is not coming out. I think he needs to recast his campaign. In the commercials, you don't see. And the successes this guy has accomplished have been unbelievable. But it's not coming through in the commercials. It's not coming through from his spokespeople. It certainly didn't come through in his own debate. And he missed the mark on that regard. And so I don't know if it's too late, but in 28 days, you're just not hearing, and granted, I'm in Florida. I don't know what the rest of the country is hearing, but you're not hearing the strength of his wins coming through all those different.
Yeah, no, I get you, Ed. I mean, I think that it's, one, he's not going to get any debate moderators bringing it up. They're not going to bring up his Middle East peace plan. They're not going to bring up the fact that he's made peace between Israel and majority Muslim countries like Kosovo, Bahrain, the UAE. There haven't been peace deals since the peace deals to end wars with Egypt and Jordan between Israel and predominantly Muslim countries. And these are Gulf states, so it's even different than those, and it's been decades. It's not going to get brought up by these moderators, it seems like. They're not going to bring up any of this to even respond to. And I tend to agree with you to some extent. I think that all of us are in a different place. We see different ads. We all see the same national media. They're not going to do them any favors. And I think the campaign can put out that messaging. Now, it may be based on where you live in Florida, even, that you may be getting different ads than people who live in more swing areas of Florida. So, you know, it's usually the I-4 corridor in Florida, which is Orlando and that surrounding area, that's been a swing area. And that's, you know, Miami is one of the few large, you know, major cities in the U.S. that actually is Republican in the sense that the mayor of Miami, not Miami Beach, but of Miami is a Republican. And the Cuban community, which is very conservative there, does not like the leftism or socialism. So there's different ads there. There's different ads in the middle, you know, kind of like the Orlando area. And then if you go up to the panhandle, it's obviously very conservative. And so depending on where you live, yeah, there's some national ads you might be seeing, but it gets very localized too. So some of that, again, other people may be seeing something different. But I think that the big point you made, which is true, is that no one's going to do this for the president. His campaign has to do it, and he has to do it, and Mike Pence has to do it tomorrow night at the VP debate. Mary, you're the final call of the day. We got about a minute left, Mary, but thanks for holding on.
Okay, thank you for taking me. My question is, if Biden should win, heaven forbid, but a grand jury has already been called to decide the legality of the Democrats' many illegalities, could Biden stop it at that point, or once it gets in the courts, would it have to go on?
So you're talking about, like, declare the winner. It's not like the news. It's not like the AP. The AP declares the winner way before we ever actually have a winner. They have to go through all of the votes, all the absentee ballots. That takes longer than election night usually. So you're certified as the winner. That's what it means, certified by each state and how many electoral votes you got. And sometimes that changes a little bit, but it doesn't change the outcome. So if someone won big, it's like, well, there might have been a state that was close or one that they even changed, but it was a smaller state, less votes, so it wasn't going to change the outcome. So it will be, the legal challenges will be, I think, a lot to these multi-ballots. It's figuring out how many ballots, just like I've received, you know, I've already gotten one live ballot in a place I haven't lived in 8 years. I've lived in other places since where I live now. How many live ballots with my name are out there? Those are going to be the legal challenges if those start coming in. We'll talk.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.